Good morning, all. And welcome to our workshop on carrying the message into correctional facilities. My name is Eddie, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a pleasure to be here. My home group is Nuts and Bolts on Long Island, Babylon, New York. Friday night step meeting, 7:30. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by. Always looking for some fresh sharing. We're going to start with a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries for the past 75 years. Followed by the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And this is our anonymity statement. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio tapes and in published or broadcast reports of our meetings, including those reports on the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. A further note about anonymity. Out of respect for others, please do not take photographs during any of the meetings at the International Convention. Also, be considerate when taking photographs around convention venues. Take care that you do not capture images of AA members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your pictures. Please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites. We would also like to remind attendees to give priority seatings in the special needs sections to those who require such seating. And we also ask everyone to turn off or silence your cell phones and electronic devices. This meeting is being recorded, and recordings of this meeting will be available at the recording sales booth in Hall B of the Convention Center. We should also have about 15 to 20 minutes at the end of the meeting for sharing from the floor. And with that, we have three wonderful speakers for this morning to share their experience, strength, and hope on carrying the message into correctional facilities. And our first speaker this morning is Dan E. from Florida.
Good morning. My name is Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my wonderful disease of alcoholism. And then I'm a switch hitter. I happen to work for the Department of Corrections in Florida. And I've been there 21 years. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I got there. But before I really begin, I would like everybody to turn around and look to the back, way in the back there. You see all those empty seats back there? We're saving those for all of the inmates that are locked up today. Because I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous ever wants it ever to be said that we don't go that extra mile to release them from one of the three most horrific events that can happen to an alcoholic. And one is death, one is institutionalization, and the other one is going to 90 meetings in 90 days. I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had the privilege of drinking for about 30 years. And I know I'm the only one in here that's probably ever been locked up. So therefore, I'll enlighten you what I call the sights and sounds of the closing door. Because I'm in the treatment field in prison, we do a lot of mental imagery. That's a fancy word for daydream, and I was very good at that. For those of you who don't know, the sight and the sound of that steel door coming closed is one that sticks with you forever. You can never, ever erase the sound of that steel. I've been in prison for 21 years. And every day, I sometimes go to two and three institutions in my job. And I'm here to tell you, when I leave that institution and I hear the sound of that door, the smell of that fresh air on the other side is so different. And I never forget it. The second thing I think that, for those of you who don't know, is there's a thing in prison called the smell. And it never goes away. It becomes part of you. And these are the human beings that we get up in the morning, go through all of the agony of trying to get access, follow all the rules and regulations, most of which we don't understand, to do one simple thing, spend an hour with a group of human beings as they look back at us saying, there must be some light here someplace. Now, when I sobered up, I had reached what we call that emotional, physical bottom, and certainly spiritual. And I had three sponsors, and I still have their names in my wallet today. All three of them have passed away. But one of them's name was Don R. And he said to me, he says, you know, Dan, he says, if I'm going to take you to a meeting in a prison, and I want you to go there only for one thing, because they're going to give you something that you'll never get anyplace else. And that is, there's an honesty among inmates that can never be duplicated on the street. He says, now, I don't want you to trust them with your pocketbook, but you trust them with your life of sobriety. So he took me to this institution, Marion Correctional Institution, Ocala, Florida, on May 20th of 1985. I was 60 days sober. My sobriety date is April 1st, 1985. And I broke every rule in the state of Florida because you're supposed to have a year of sobriety. You're supposed to. I did none of those things and went to my first meeting. For the next 3.5 years, I only missed one meeting, and that was when I buried my mother. And in that 3.5 years, some remarkable things happened because I got sober listening to inmates. I'm one of the few free people, I think, can honestly say that I got my first sobriety and steps going to prison AA meetings every Monday night. Now, after doing that for about 3.5 years, the Department of Corrections in the state of Florida, this was in the in the late 80s, got involved in the treatment business. Now, for the benefit of this discussion, I'm very good at this. It's called being a two-hatter. So when you see me do this, that simply means I've taken off my AA hat and I'm putting on my Department of Corrections hat. Now, I'm not speaking as a representative of the Department of Corrections. I have to make that disclaimer. But I will speak as about my experience, strength, and hope as being an employee of the Department of Corrections. Now, during my brief comments, though, I'm going to get confused. So if you see me doing this and this and this, and I miss one, let it go. Just let it go. And I tell you this because I have the privilege of speaking to a great number of groups within our state organization. And I've never once hid the fact that I'm an alcoholic and my name is Dan. In fact, at many of the sessions that I speak to, I will open up my comments when talking about whatever the issue is and say, my name is Dan, I'm a drunk. And if you really want to get bureaucracies fired up, especially in Florida, many times, just saying that you're a drunk and you're a bureaucrat in the same breath is just a little more than they can handle. Now, here's the deal. They started this treatment program at Marion Correctional, and because I was in there every Monday night, and some of you dedicated AA or citizen volunteers, as we call them in Florida, know you get to know the folks at the institution pretty well. And so they asked me, we'd like to have you come to work on our substance abuse treatment program that we're starting up. And I says, no way. I'm a salesman. I'm not a counselor. I'm just a drunk trying to stay sober and carry the message. They kept after me, and I says, okay. So that was in 1989. And for 12 years, I was the clinical director of a substance abuse program in prison, 300-bed TCs. Now I've got my DC hat on. And during that time, I noticed that there was something that was missing. What was missing was access. In other words, our citizen volunteers from AA, all my AA buddies, were having a very difficult time to getting into the institution. Clearance, backgrounds, all the rest of it. So I was on a mission. And I'm here to tell you, 21 years later, I'm still struggling with the same things that you struggle with on a daily basis. We have not solved this problem. But I will tell you there is hope. Because in the Department of Corrections in Florida, we have the responsibility for 100,000 locked up inmates in our state, 150,000 on probation and parole. That's a quarter of a million. And of that, our data shows that 66% of them had a drink and were intoxicated during the crime or within 24 hours prior to. That 66,000 drunks / andas that are locked up in our prison system, all begging for the same thing that I found in there when I first sobered up. Our door in Florida is wide open, but we have the same difficult restrictions that you have in any part, not only in our country, USA, but I'm sure internationally as well. So with my DC hat on, I'm just going to say, we really don't trust you AAers too well. And here's what we don't trust. And I don't mean to offend you. I mean to give you the other side of the picture. Here's what we don't trust. You come to us and you ask us for clearance. It costs a tremendous amount of money to provide all these background checks. We go through all of the paperwork. We get you cleared. And guess what? We never see you again. And in the halls of the department, we have this thing. 100 AAers show up for sign up. 10 show up, and 3 we see at the Monday night meeting. Now, you know, in order to be fair to the inmates and those locked up in county jails, I think we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to look at all sides of the street. Now, the part that the Department of Corrections in Florida has accomplished well, I think, in the past few years, is we have begun to open our doors to your correctional chairs. We happen to have 3 areas in Florida. And recently we had all 3 correctional chairs went to Tallahassee and sat down and they met with the deputy secretary and some of the other folks that make decisions. That is an opening that I think really helps the department and it also helps Alcoholics Anonymous. We've tried to simplify the training process. It used to be 2 days training for a citizen volunteer to come in. During work hours. It's hard enough for us AAs to get jobs to start with, let alone take 2 days off to go in and do your training. We have simplified that down to now about 4 hours. Now, our new secretary is all about what we call reentry. And reentry is what the treatment folks call a holistic approach. A holistic, to me, means we hope that every inmate leaving who has a substance abuse or alcohol problem has the ability to contact either a sponsor, a temporary sponsor, or certainly have a meeting list so that they can get to that first meeting in that first 24 hours, because we know that works. It is powerful data supporting that. What we in Florida have, I think, again, we've opened up those doors for the AA community to come in, but there's still a lot of old prejudices. Number one, it's difficult for the department to allow you to come in when you have open warrants. We are obliged by statute to arrest you. So a word to the wise, if you have an open warrant, or even think that you have one, the treatment committee and the Grapevine committee are desperately looking for volunteers. Another way of looking at it, if you are at home, stay at home. And that happens in prison all the time. Sometimes for good reasons and sometimes for not. I'm just going to close with a couple of things because I think I'm getting close. There's a lot of controversy today about whether or not AAers, citizen volunteers, should come in and sign certain documents. because you have to sign these documents according to the state statute. And this is the reason why. I've had the privilege of being in a couple of riots in my 21 years. And one of the things the warden has to know is where everybody is at any given time. Because when the hammer falls down, you can't be a lonesome citizen volunteer AA guy sitting in your AA meeting thinking everything's fine, because it really isn't. So we have to know where you're at. The second thing is, the minute that you sign up and become a citizen volunteer in the state of Florida, you have the same privileges, rights, and responsibilities as a state employee. And a lot of volunteers don't understand that, and I'm sure most of the other departments throughout the country are the same. Therefore, if you should trip and fall and hurt yourself, it is the obligation of the state of Florida through workman's compensation to take care of you. Now, all of these things, a lot of times, we don't talk much about when we have our corrections meeting at our area assemblies. And maybe we should, because this explains a lot as to why you have to go through all of that paperwork. The other thing is, why do we have dress codes in prison? You know, this is always a touchy subject. But when we carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into one of our institutions, we need to always think about carrying the success of a story, not the story itself. And part of that is how you appear to other professionals when you walk through that gate is very, very important. And don't think for a moment they don't know it. I can tell you this, that my life is saved every day by correctional officers, not guards. And one of the things that can really, really hurt the rapport of a citizen volunteer is when you walk in and you start talking about guards. Because throughout this country, every correctional officer is a certified law enforcement officer with a tremendous amount of professional training. So if you want to really impress somebody, when you walk in and you see that bedraggled guy, and whether they wear blue uniforms or brown or whatever it is, walk up and say, "You're a correctional officer and we appreciate you." Because I will tell you what, the minute you walk into that institution, a lot of folks don't know this, and because I'm the only one here ever been locked up, you know that that officer knows who you are, what you look like, how you walk, how you talk, and if it changes in any way, shape, or form, his little rabbit ears goes up. Now, why does he do that? He does that for a couple of reasons. Because inmates are a little bit manipulative, can take advantage of you, can get your phone number, can talk you out of a cell phone, on and on and on. So it's a delicate balance between AA and what we have to do as an employee of the Department of Corrections. Now I'd like to finish with this. I truly believe, because I meet many of the former felons on the street in AA, and it's amazing when I go to a meeting, and if you could just ask everybody in the room to raise their hand, we won't do it here because I'm the only one that's ever been locked up. If you would kindly raise your hand if you've ever served time, and I'm willing to bet that there's a good number in every AA meeting that we go to. Now, they didn't get there by accident. They got there because dedicated people like you do this year after year after year after year, and you're wore out, you're tired, you can't find replacements, the five you line up, none of them show. I can go on and on and on. And yet, look at this room. It's filled with that dedication. I am sober today because I listen to inmates. My older brother died in prison. He couldn't stay sober. He served most of his adult life in prison. I've been around prison since I was 13 years old. Is there light? If you look around now, most of those seats are full back there. Must have got the word out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. And our next speaker is Joanne M. from Wisconsin.
Well, there sure are a lot of you. My name is Joanne McLaughlin. My sobriety date is June 8, 1986. I saw my sponsor walk in. Gary, where are you now? Okay. He's here. I can do this. I have to do this now. The first international conference I attended was in San Diego, And then I stood at the back of the audience, and these people were up at monstrous rooms talking to you and sharing to you, and I kind of fantasized what it would be like to do that someday. And it's like my alcoholic mind took me to a place where I thought that I would come here and you would put me in, you would be in awe of everything I said, that you'd invite me to all your conferences, and I would lead you on the road to happy destiny. And then a bubble burst, and I'm here now. And I tell you, I know nothing. I'm very afraid, and I want my sponsor. I was born in Pittston, Pennsylvania, to a very loving, dysfunctional, alcoholic home. And I know today it's taken me years that they did the best they could. For years, I always just said my name was Joe McLaughlin. And I realized that I was penalizing, punishing my mother by not mentioning her name. And now, after a lot of fourth and fifths and a lot of inside work, I can tell you my name is Joanne, and my mother did the best she could today. That still hurts. Wow. I took my first drink at the age of 8, and my last at 41. Why would an 8-year-old child drink? Answer, bad things often happen to children of alcoholics, not always by the alcoholic parent, but often by alcoholic friends and often by priests. Bad things continued to happen to me and my family. I saw no way out of the chaos. It was what everybody else did. It was all my aunts and uncles and both sides. Come on, I was born to an Irish Catholic family. They drink. They continue to drink. But I don't drink. And you created that person in me. I don't have to pick up a drink today, no matter how great the pain. I can hug anybody. I can hug anyone in this room, even if I don't know you, and you'll help relieve me of any pain that I have. And for that, I have to tell you, I sincerely and deeply love each of you. Today, I know that I was just as much an alcoholic at the age of 8 as I was at 41. It didn't matter how much I drank. It didn't matter what I drank. What mattered was what happened to me when I drank. And I chased the delusional, safe dreams that I had at the age of 8 for 33 years, trying to get the same high. And I never achieved it. Nothing worked for me in this program or in my life until, as the 12x12 says, I became as willing to listen as the dying could be. And I truly wanted to die when I crawled in the doors of AA. And I didn't want to be among any of you. You said the word he, you said the word God, and both just made me sick to my stomach at that point. It's taken me years to realize that we bond on the inside, not on the outside. And no matter what we do on the outside, our political, religious, any of that, sexuality, none of that matters. What matters is our inside core, where we are all identical. And that's a very freeing thought and allows me to accept everyone and hope that you accept me too. I don't have a home group unless you count all the prison and jail meetings I go to. I travel a great deal and I plop my butt in any AA meeting I can find wherever I am. And I can tell you that once the Serenity Prayer is said, I'm safe once again, and that AA is alive and well all over the U.S. and Canada. And that Serenity Prayer just leads the way, and a calmness comes over the room. Have you felt that in a meeting? No matter what goes on before the meeting, the Serenity Prayer is said, and everybody just gets still. And we feel the spirit of the meeting. And that's why I attend so many AA meetings everywhere. My 12-step service behind the walls started 23 years ago when I tried to volunteer at my local jail, the Kenosha County Jail in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Kenosha, Wisconsin people, look at that, look at that, yeah. And they told me AA had been fired because of no-shows. And I think some of the sponsors might have gone in under the influence of things. So we started an AA meeting there, and that was 23 years ago. 22 years ago, I tried to volunteer at the Robert E. Ellsworth Correctional Center in Union Grove, with Karen, wherever you are, and they also told me that AA had been fired. When I walk into a correctional facility and they want to slam the door in our face because we have not been responsible, that hurts. And I swore then that I would do my utmost best as an individual member of AA to make sure that I didn't promise to do anything that I could not do. And I've tried to live up to that sincerely ever since then. I was the outside sponsor of Tichita Maximum Prison in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin for 7 years, and I rotated out of that because of other service work. I was the outside sponsor of Racine Correctional Institution for Men in Racine until I found people like Jim Dee back there to take my place, because I really believe that women should carry the message into women and men should carry the message into men. One of the most painful things I had to rotate out of was Southern Oaks Girls School in Union Grove, Wisconsin. Before the girls were even in the school, and this is a secure max prison for girls, they would invite AA and Alateen in to be part of their recovery program. I'd been sponsored for about 12 years, and a young girl that had been coming to the meetings for 4 years. In Wisconsin, you can be incarcerated for capital crimes at the age of 11. And she came in at 12. She attended the meetings every week. And then when she was 16, she came up to me and she said, "I have to go now." I knew this would happen. And I said, "Where?" She said, "To Cheetah, the maximum security prison." And I said, "You went to court?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "How long did you get?" She said, 35 years. And I couldn't even hug her. We're both standing in the hallway crying hysterically. I said, I knew I had to rotate away from the girls. I couldn't do it. I was getting too involved in her personal lives. So I went to the women and got involved in their personal lives. I am presently the outside sponsor of the Kenosha County Jail and have been for 23 years. That's where they kicked us out of. And I'm still the outside sponsor of Ellsworth Correctional Center for Women in Union Grove, Wisconsin, and they kicked us out too. We have good meetings. I have vivid memories there too. I can tell you about a woman, let's call her Mary, that came to the meeting for over a year and never looked anybody in the eyes with her head hung low. And she come in, didn't talk, but she listened. You could see she was listening because her fingers were moving, you know. And after a year, there was an opening for a literature chair for the group. We let them manage their groups. It's their group. They need to be responsible for getting the books there and all that. And I asked her if she'd like to do it. And she looked up, and it's the first time I saw her eyes in a year. And she said yes. And she was just so thrilled. And she was there ahead of time. She had all the brochures laid out and counted to make sure nobody took any. You know, I mean, it was their responsibility. And they made sure that no one gets a free big book until they come to three meetings. We're not the Gideon Bible Company. And we're responsible, you know, to that rainbow can. They throw donations in. And after about 3 months of that, she came to the meeting, and she sat next to me, which was a first. And her head was down, and I could see she was kind of crying. And I asked her, "Mary, what's the matter?" And she looked in my eyes. And I looked directly in her eyes, and I saw so much pain, I had to touch her hand. And when I do, have you ever seen The Green Mile? When he touched the inmate's hands, and he felt the pain rush through him? I felt her pain rush through my body, and I broke down and cried. And we both cried. And I don't know where Mary is. She was crying because out of all the misery in her life, her son was going to prison for life. She said, "He made a big mistake." She says, "It's my fault." And I said, "No. No, it's not your fault. You can't fix that." And all I can hope is that Mary might show up here someday, that she might still be alive. I don't know. She had a miserable life to go out to. But what I hope she carried with her is the seed of hope that we were able to give her through the literature and through the open discussions we have in our meetings. We hold open big book studies at the Robert E. Ellsworth Correctional Center because we have it's an earned release program, and we have so many strictly addicts that attend. So we have to have an open speaker meeting. We have open speaker meetings, and we have open big book study meetings. What we want to do, and this is a strong statement I'm going to make, addicts that have never touched a drop of alcohol or never experienced alcohol cannot really truly be members of Alcoholics Anonymous. If they attend our meetings, in my heart, I believe they'll be dead because they won't hear what they need to hear. I believe, in my heart, that if we have the open big book study meetings, that they can find out who they are and we help them find the program that they need. We give them NA meeting list, CA meeting list, whatever other meeting list they need. We try to direct them to the program that they need because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not anybody anonymous. And if that sounds... Thank you. I was afraid I was going to be hung. Some of my family members are addicts, alcoholics and addicts, and My partner's middle son sent me an AA medallion. He still drinks and he still drinks drugs. And then he and his wife sent me this great AA t-shirt. And they still drink and they still drug. But what that shows me is that they know where they can go if they need help. And I do my best to stay out of their program because I would definitely mess that up. You know, how many of you have been there? How many ex-offenders are in the room? How many of you have ever driven drunk? Now you're working an honest program. Okay. The problem that I don't know why I wrote all these notes. My partner told me I'd ad-lib, and I do, because corrections is in my heart. I've served as ashtray cleaner in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Area 75 corrections chair, all the way down to the panel 53 delegate to the 53rd, to the General Service Conference in New York, and it's a blur how I got there. I can tell you that all you do is try to do the next right thing. And every time they gave me a service responsibility, I never felt worthy of or able to do any position they gave me. Everything I knew, I learned the week I was rotating out. And here we are now. And I still wonder if you're going to ask me to talk at your conventions. I don't know. The ego comes on. How many of you volunteer in prisons? Jails? Oh, God. That's so good. Another thing we do at Ellsworth, out of dedication to the singleness of purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous, is we make up our own temporary contact forms and corresponding contact forms, and we hand them out, and we bring them in, and I send the corresponding contact request to Jim Malone, who has done a fantastic job. And the temporary contact forms have a disclaimer on them. And if I can find it. Note, you must have experienced a problem with alcohol to be part of this contact program. Duly addicted women are most welcome as long as alcohol is not an issue. Because I have gotten temporary contact requests filled, and then I've received call from women who say, why did you connect me with this woman? She's a crystal meth addict. I don't know anything about that. So I had to start focusing on that. And this is what we do, and we're very open with the women. And we show up every week. And, you know, I go in because they can't come out. I go in because I never had to pay a high price for some of the crimes I committed. I was in an escort service for many years. I drove drunk many, many times. I stole a lot of things. I lied all the time. And my mother was a policewoman, so I never paid the consequences. So I go in because I never paid the consequences. And I go in because they are just about the most honest meetings that I attend. I can go to an outside meeting and anybody sits there and says, they're crying before the meeting starts, serenity prayer is read, and everybody's saying, I'm fine. You're not fine. You were just crying. What are you talking about? You know, I go there because they are ripe. They are in the pit of gloom and hell when they're in there, and if only for a moment we have a chance to plant the seed of hope. And that's why I go. The volunteers that I go in with are sitting in this row right here. Because we're here, we have other dedicated volunteers who are taking our place to make sure we could come here. And if they don't show up every week, I remove them. Because it's very difficult to get volunteers. I had one woman who just got clear. She took a day off work to go. And then I asked her to meet me at the Wednesday meeting. She never showed. I mean, she's only been clear 2 weeks. If you aren't going to do the service, but you all do it. I'm talking to the choir here. You know, when I go into a correctional meeting at Ellsworth and they say we didn't have a meeting last week, that's my fault. As outside sponsor, I have a responsibility to the people on the inside to bring in healthy women to talk to them. And all varied opinions of the big book and their spirituality or Buddhism or whatever goes on, you know. I'm not a religious person anymore. I don't belong to any religious entity. But what I do have is a spirit inside of me that loves and respects all your beliefs. I'm not attacking you anymore as I was in the beginning. I tried. I tried to change the big book. I tried to change your program. How am I doing? I got 5 minutes. Wow. I'm in charge.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. He just talked to me. We are so diverse. We are so wonderful. People of all colors. Look at the color in this room. I want women of color to come into my correctional facility. And share with the women in there. They need you in there. I'm white. That's all I am is white. You know, and we're all white, and we do the best we can, but we need people of color and different cultures to go in. We have Runuka, who's Indian, you know, from the country of India. That's the only person of color we have. So if you're ever in Kenosha, Wisconsin, you move down there, if you touch my hand, you are in corrections. I guarantee you. I'd like to close with something that I think is very important to people in recovery. It's a Buddha Zen thought. You can search throughout the entire universe for someone who is more deserving of your love and affection than you are yourself. And that person is not to be found anywhere. You yourself, as much as anybody in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. How many of you have seen Avatar, the movie? Okay. When I say I see you, what do you say back to me? Louder. And if I say I respect you, what do you say back to me? And if I say I love you, what do you say back to me? Please say that louder. Okay, and look around the room, and if there's anyone you see at this conference that's standing in a corner with their head hung down, and it's a woman, it might be Mary, and please seek her out and bring her into the circle with us. Don't let anybody stay on the outside because they might die today. And thank you so much for asking me to come. Thank my sponsor for keeping me humble. Thank my sponsees for keeping me busy, busy, busy. I love you.
Thank you so much, Joanne. And our final speaker for this morning, Diane O from California.
Good morning. I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic. And I am overwhelmed. I am thrilled. This is the mountaintop experience. To see all those hands go up, to see how many of you are doing corrections, and to have so many of my pals from gosh knows where here today is, I want to thank my new best friend at GSO for this loving invitation, Jim. What a privilege it is working with you. Well, where do I begin? Well, let me begin with the treasures that I have in my life today. You know, coming from a street drunk, I was only out there 10 years. I was 22, almost 23 when I dove into the sea of alcohol. And I left California and I ran east and I terrorized more than New Jersey and New York, running the streets and the subways, running from the cops, diving into dumpsters, did it all, locked up, tied down, put away. And no one really thought I had a chance. My family was told just to leave her alone, don't even try to intervene. Just pray to God she finds her way before she kills herself or somebody else. And the first time locked up, the Hospital and Institution Committee of Northern California found me. They planted the seed that brought me home. And my heart lies there. And the treasures are, I have a sobriety date of August the 30th, 1974, which never should have happened. And my life just gets richer and more meaningful with each passing year in AA, even though this last year has been by far the hardest and most painful, having lost the love of my life, my soulmate, a year ago. The fact that my life has continued so full, and it's really boils down to my home group, my women's group, that they have taught me, they have helped me to recover through the 12 steps, to grow up through service. That's present progressive. I am recovering through the 12 steps. I am growing up through service. Loving, wonderful, amazing sponsorship. Peggy's here today. And before Peggy, her sister Pat. And when Pat moved away to Grants Pass, Oregon, I immediately nabbed Peggy because I believe in a rock solid foundation right here at home. I also have another amazing group that I attend every day, Monday through Friday, the R&B Noon Meeting in Sunnyvale. And R&B's here all over the place, you betcha. And I have a very satisfactory conscious partnership with my very own God in the entire business of living today. And AA has blessed me with unbelievable opportunities to serve. I am so grateful, and never in my heart have I ever thought that I was beginning to be worthy of any of the gifts you all continue to give me. Today, my team, my pals, my Northern California Hospital and Institution Committee are here. Right now I am And I must say Southern California, too, because as the public information chairperson for Northern California, it has been my profound delight and privilege to attend the Southern California meeting several times a year. And having learned from them in amazing ways, they're coming to us. We're going to them. We've reunited. It's just been fabulous. I'm also a chairman of the Finance Committee currently, and that's keeping me more than busy. And my new mountaintop experience, when I was elected delegate, I'm not even sure I felt as thrilled as I felt the day that Ken called me and told me that I had been chosen to serve on the Trustees Corrections Committee as an appointed committee member. My husband hadn't died not even a year before that, and I had really not even thought I should make myself available. And so this is really the gift of all gifts, because I so totally believe in carrying the message behind the walls and wire, the message of hope to the confined alcoholic. This is where, to me, the true 12-step work lies today. You know, back when I came in, we were chasing drunks day and night, night and day, and then a lot of other things came in, and I don't think we get to do it like we used to get to do it. I mean, I've gone to homes where the wife was so mad at her drunk husband, she locked him in a chicken coop in the backyard, and he was too drunk to know any better. And I've gone where they both had guns, and they were going to do each other in, and we don't get that anymore. But behind the walls and wire, we meet future members of Alcoholics Anonymous, some of whom have paroled recently, one in our R&B Noon meeting that just Jason out of San Quentin, the big Q, has been the biggest thrill a minute that any of us have experienced, because he has come to us from profound experiences, locked up, tied down, put away for years and years and years, and he's happy and he's sober today. iCorrections began right away, but never so deeply embedded in me as it has been the last years. I have been privileged to go into San Quentin as a volunteer, and that's where I met Jason. And Jason was about to parole, and I pounced on him like a panther. And when I found out he was coming to my neck of the woods, it was all over. Because I promised him the moon and the R&B. I see a sponsor back there, Kevin. The R&B New Group just took him in, and any reservations, any fears he had, because he'd been in and out a lot, were totally taken care of by this loving group and all the other AAs in Sunnyvale and in Santa Clara Valley. It's just been a fabulous experience. I also coordinate the meetings at CTF Soledad State Prison. And I go into, and that may be what I want to talk about. I always just turn the word to God, and whatever comes through, it's his fault. I go into Salinas Valley State Prison, which is a level 4 tough place. Guys, there are really, really been through it all. And, especially because this grapevine, October the 10th, 2009, bears the picture of the group that we started, the Down But Not Out group. And they really represent for me what works or is working for us in Northern California in corrections. In 2004, Jeannie Woodford, who was then our Class A trustee and also recently chosen director of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, told all of the prisons in California for the first time, you've got to open your doors to Alcoholics Anonymous. Until then, Salinas Valley wasn't having any part of us. We had come at them, and they had turned us down. And within 1 week, they'd opened their doors to us. And the first thing we did was meet with the warden. I really believe it all begins with the big guy. And communication is the golden key. And we came bearing the gift of love, our AA, all of the AA goodies that they need to have at their disposal. They want to know about us. And asking them what it was that they expected from us. What were the rules and regulations? What would they want from our volunteers? We did that before anything else. And having had a very successful, loving share with the warden, we asked him then to bring in his posse, some of his correctional officers. One of you mentioned thanking your correctional officers. We never go in anywhere without really interacting with the professionals there, thanking them, because they make it possible, too. And then we have loving, wonderful inside sponsors, and those relationships began to build right away. On the second meeting, we brought the whole team in, our AA guys, and met with the warden and his posse, his associates, as well as the people that were going to serve as inside sponsors. And we began to build a bond of trust, so that we have communication that flows amazingly today. We were lucky right off the bat to get into Salinas Valley every single Wednesday. And they're 5 yards. And their yards are not always open at level 4, you can well imagine. But actually, yard E, there's Alpha and Bravo and Charlie and Delta. And then Echo Yard is the guys that do a lot of worker stuff around the prison. They're level 1. But the other 4 yards are level 4. And we happened into the Bravo Yard, Yard B. And I will never forget that first night as long as I live, because it was that profound an experience. These kids are sensitive needs, and they're young. They're so new to their crime. They're so new to their being imprisoned. And they'd all been gang-affiliated, and some of them with pretty horrific stories. And they had decided that there was a better way of life, and they had dropped the gang affiliation. And in many cases, you know, one kid, his father was head of Mexican mafia and had been locked down for years and years. And this kid was made to commit, told to commit murder, had to commit murder when he was age 11 for the first murder. And this young man was only in his early 20s. And he didn't want that life anymore. And he had both federal and state time to serve. And he came to the meeting with such eagerness, such willingness. It was so absolutely amazing. But that first night, they had elected a secretary, someone to lead the meeting, a chairperson. So we got that person in, he went first, and kind of went through with him how you run an AA meeting, bringing all the tools. And also because of the beautiful little pink cans we have in Northern California that make their way merrily around all of our AA meetings, that AA members fill with love, with dimes, nickels, quarters, pennies, and dollar bills now and then. And they, you know, they give us, the gift is so enormous. We always have the literature we need to carry to the confined alcoholic. We had the table spread out, one table with Spanish and one table with English. And so we worked with the secretary ahead of time, chairperson for the group. And then the guys started to come in. And I wish everyone could have seen the down and out. I mean, and it's interesting when they named their group Down But Not Out. That was quite an appropriate name. But that's the way they came in the first night. And I was selected to stand at the door and greet. And I don't think they knew what to do with me, because I'm energy plus, type A personality. It's, hi, I'm Diane, I'm an alcoholic. I'd love to hear your first name and the word alcoholic afterwards. And the word was going back down the line, because they were coming down this hallway, single file, hands behind their back, heads down. And I'm sure some of them really just, it sure beat sitting in a cell, the pamphlet we're currently working on rewriting. They'd come just for that reason. It was amazing, the results I got. There was a little hesitant, some of them, but I did get the handshake, the firm handshake, and I did get the first name and the word alcoholic. They're so used to being called by their last names there or a number. And right away, you know, the human being began to come through. When we got them all in, we had the chairs in a big circle. And we wound up all facing one another. We went around the room again and introduced ourselves, and I never heard anything other than the first name and the word alcoholic. That first night we were challenged with a lot of interesting questions. You all might maybe guess what they were. Things like, well, you guys on the streets have your home groups. What do you expect us to do in here? And because they weren't really dealing with each other. They were all very, very afraid of the other guy at first. What if I don't believe in God? What if I'm an atheist? What if I'm an agnostic? And we took care of that. And by the end of that first meeting, there was a beginning of feeling of some unity between these guys. One young man came up to me after the meeting with a big book in his hand. Daniel Dennis Scott, J42897. And I say that to you because it's Daniel Dennis Scott who was the reason why you all have an AA Comes of Age in soft cover at this international convention. He wrote the letter. I'll get to that later. But he came to me, and I had no idea at the time that he'd been through 10 years of pure unadulterated hell in a gang at Pelican Bay. And had been shipped out of there and ended up in Charlie Yard at Salinas Valley, which is a war zone. And it was there that he just said no more. He went through a profound spiritual awakening. And he came and he could not believe he could actually take our literature back to his cell with him. He could not believe that this big book was his. And there were literally tears in his eyes. And from that day, we marched forward with meetings that have been beyond what I can tell you about. The depth of sharing, the commitment to service. I kept telling them, just bloom where you're planted, grow where you're planted. Go out and be godlights in the yard. Go be my godlights. Bring in the lost sheep. The excitement when they would bring in a new guy. Or one of them would have gone through a horrible, horrible happening. I'll never forget sitting next to Lorenzo one day, and he was in tears. His brother had just been murdered. They'd made a great batch of Pruno where he lived. And he looked at the Pruno. Do I want to drink that Pruno? This is the homemade stuff they do amazingly well behind the walls somewhere. Or do I want to go to that meeting across the yard? And he chose to come to the meeting. And his expression of hope, his determination to stay sober, so moved me. I was sitting next to him. I looked at him and I said, I wish I could hug you. You have just spoken the words of hope of Alcoholics Anonymous like I've never heard. It was just so beautiful. And because I couldn't hug him, this is a group now that weren't even really talking to each other the first night, several members of the group leaped up, raced across the room, and gave him this huge warm embrace. As we went on, within months, I was telling the guys, you know, you really need to belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to join AA World Services. And it took them a while to think about that. And I brought in the papers when they asked me to. I didn't push anything on them. And it wasn't all that long before they had them all correctly filled out and did all the proper paperwork to send to the AA World Service office. And they'd chosen someone to be their general service representative. And we'd started big book study. And when those papers came back and they were officially a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a group, and that, by the way, they had also named themselves. And this was interesting because the same guy that wrote the letter about AA Comes of Age came up with the name of Down But Not Out. And they did that very democratically in our usual AA way and decided that name was an appropriate name for the group. And the Down But Not Out group became a member of AA, of Alcoholics Anonymous. About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I thought it'd be fun. I thought it'd be good. I'm always looking about dignity, feeling this idea of dignity, value, and worth, wanting the guys to have that. And there was so much happening with this group in terms of people getting sober and staying sober. Sponsorship, sponsoring each other. Robin, who was our editor of the Grapevine, the time I talked to her at a service conference, and she actually asked me for the names and numbers of the guys, and she sent them copies of the Grapevine. They were getting free subscriptions, which was amazing because the group was just doing so well, and the AA World Service Office knew about them. I thought it'd be fun to have their picture in the Grapevine. And so began a year of work with the prison system. This had never been done before. An entire year of getting all the legal machinery in order so that their picture could appear in the Grapevine. Each inmate had to sign a release, the release paper, and they all had to come dressed similarly. They had to have their uniform on. You can see it here. Well, you can't see it from where you are, but if you saw the October Grapevine, page 10, they all had to have the white tennis shoes and their state uniform on. It was a mountaintop experience. That picture came through, and then we had to untangle it and get it free from the prison system in order to send it to the AA World Service or to the AA Grapevine so that it could be printed. And once Robin got it and the team got it in New York, it was only a couple months before it was in the Grapevine. And you know what it did for the guys was more than words what I can possibly tell you. AA Comes of Age. The reason this all happened was Dan progressed so amazingly because of his commitment to sobriety. You know, he followed when he asked me, how do I get a sponsor? I said, you write to the AA World Service Office. They'll give you a sponsor. You'll get someone you can write to. And he started connecting with this guy in Michigan. He came to me with questions about his fourth step out of the big book. I gave him the direction I could. He wrote that fourth step out, and he mailed it out of the prison to Michigan. And when he shared that with the other guys in the group, they about fell on the floor. You did what? Dan says, what do they not know about me? What am I putting in my fourth step if the whole prison system doesn't know about me? And beautifully. He got it back from his sponsor in Michigan. And that carried such, oh my gosh, the impetus it gave the rest of the group to start writing, to get the sponsorship. Of course, then he started sponsoring, and others in his little posse that had time started sponsoring, so they were working with each other. So I wanted to bring in a copy because Dan was just voracious in his love of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got permission to give him a hardback cover of AA Comes of Age. Doggone if he didn't take that to his home away from home, as I call the cells, and began to read it, and every single week he gave a little book report to the group. It was darling. It was wonderful. And the guys started saying, well, we want a copy. And, of course, Dan wasn't going to give up his because it was kind of hard to pass it all around. And I said, well, it's been done before. Well, let's do it again. Write a letter. Ask AA World Services, you know, to see if we can get the AA Comes of Age in softcover. After all, it is in softcover in Spanish. So Dan wrote the most amazing letter I've ever read. It was a beautiful letter. And they told me at the office that they'd got many letters before, but none like Dan's. And so last year they approved a printing of AA Comes of Age in softcover. And Dan, locked up behind the walls and wire, got the letter and the first copy, or supposedly, hopefully, the first copy of AA Comes of Age in softcover. So we here at the International Convention, and he knows we're all here, receiving the AA Comes of Age in softcover. Thank you, Daniel Dennis Scott, J42897, in Sally State Prison. This group continues to flourish. Jim here is from the AA World Service Office. They got scattered around during a big upheaval in California. They got scattered to other places. But we still hear from them. They're still alive and active and well and practicing these principles in all their affairs and bringing in the sheep and sponsoring others and doing whatever they can behind the walls and wire, even though some of them have no hope ever of leaving. But they are Godlights. They're one of us. They carry that message of hope to those who are confined, just as we try to do from the streets. Nothing makes my soul soar or my heart smile more than getting to do this, the privilege of carrying this message behind the walls and wire. And I am in the most grateful place. Like I said, I've been privileged to do many, many things in Alcoholics Anonymous, but right now I feel like I'm at the mountaintop and I couldn't be more blessed or feel more lucky. And I thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for being a part of it. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks to all our speakers, Dan, Joanne, and Diane. I kind of knew when you guys showed up at first meeting of the day about corrections that probably a lot of people were involved already. But when Joanne asked how many people were taking meetings into facilities, the show of hands, especially from up here, I cannot tell you how moving that was. And I thank you all for your service, too. So while I know I'm preaching to the choir here, by the way, I wanted to mention also I currently have the privilege of serving as the Correctional Facilities Chair for Southeast New York. That's Area 49. And actually, I don't do anywhere near the amount of work that these three great people do. Basically, there are two programs we have that we try to encourage. One is Bridging the Gap or Pre-Release Contact, which, again, I'm sure most people are here are aware of. If anybody is not, just in case, go back to your group, go back to your district, your area, find out how you can get involved with Bridging the Gap. Those people that will be filling those seats in the back that Dan talked about, that's how we get them into those seats. The transition from being behind the walls to Alcoholics Anonymous on the outside. And the other is corrections correspondence. You can get forms to correspond with an inmate who will be incarcerated for an extended period of time. They're available on the website, aa.org, or you can go downstairs to the GSO display. If they don't have them available there, somebody there will definitely hook you up and answer any questions that you might have with that stuff. I get to participate in both of those programs as being on the Correctional Facilities Committee for Southeast New York. And as part of the Bridging the Gap, really my job is just to open those requests and farm them out to the people that will handle them in any place in New York State. But I get to read those requests before they go out, and I can't tell you how much that helps keep it green for me, because sometimes there'll be just a personal note on there that lets me know what some of these people are going through, what life is like on the inside. And probably the simplest thing is part of the form asks for where they will be released to, an address and a phone number. And very often that will say something no more than halfway house, I guess. And when it just, this person doesn't even know where they're going to go, where they're going to live, and what they're going to do when they get on the outside. Just keeps it real green for me and lets me know how important it is that we are there to have the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous available when they reach out. So we have a little bit of time available for anybody who would like to share. There's a microphone on the floor or questions for our great speakers this morning. And we would ask that people try to keep it short, at most 3 minutes. Thank you.
What's the relationship between hospitals and institutions and correctional facilities?
Would anybody like to feel that?
Dying alcoholic again. We have Hospital Institution Committee in Northern California. We take care of both corrections. We go to jails. We go to detox centers. We go to hospitals. We go to prisons. This is the name that began way back in 1942 when Warden Clinton T. Duffy first recognized the need for us to go, you know, for the recidivism he knew would be reduced if we started taking our little band of erratic alkies in there. And then we got into fussy fights about who got to go in on what night, so we had to form a committee. So as we've just been called to the Hospital and Institution Committee of Northern California, and we do both corrections and treatment. Does that answer your question? Thanks.
Pat Brennan, alcoholic, from the California Northern Coastal Area, Area 6. And this question has to do with inmate correspondence. I've been a member of that for a few years, an invaluable part of my sobriety. And I have passed that message to others who have signed up to be an inmate correspondent. And it seems that in Northern California, ironically, the list of volunteers exceeds the list of inmates that are interested in our inmate correspondence service. And I know that the program would want to align people in California with inmates in other parts of the country, but I am wondering if the question would be, why do you suppose that people in Northern California, males that have signed up for inmate correspondence, can't seem to be aligned with an inmate, and whether there's an opportunity to further carry the message of the inmate correspondent service while conducting H&I meetings in institutions?
If I understand, the question is, there are volunteers in California that are not being hooked up with correspondence? Okay. I don't know exactly the answer to the question. My guess would be when the General Service Office does connect a volunteer with an inmate, they are not from the same area. They try to hook people up that are at least two regions away. So one possibility is that the inmates that are requesting correspondence are too close so that they would not be combined with the volunteers from California. For a more definite answer, I would suggest call the General Service Office, ask for the corrections desk, and they may be able to help you more specifically. Oh, and we have additional info.
We've been lucky in our prisons because the guys, when they write to GSO, immediately get hooked up. But I do know that there is a delay sometimes because there are a lot more inmates writing than there are volunteers. We need more volunteers to do the corrections correspondence. We definitely need, I don't know that is true of the women's, but I definitely know. Jim, women's, do we need more women as well as more men for corrections? I know where, this is the man. This is my best friend. Jim Malone, GSO. Jim.
I'm Jim. I have the pleasure of serving as your GSO coordinator for corrections on the corrections desk in New York. I'm shocked to hear that there are men on the outside waiting for correspondence. If they have signed up, we don't have anybody in our system on the outside that's male that's waiting, that we're aware of. I don't know if maybe they signed up for a local correspondence service and then they haven't contacted New York. We have, at this time, about 60 to 70 men that are waiting for an outside correspondent. I can tell you right now, if we get 70 volunteers today, that still won't cover it, because as we speak, letters are coming into the office with new requests. We constantly need new correspondents because we are constantly getting more requests. The number of requests from male alcoholics that are incarcerated continues to outpace the number of male AA volunteers on the outside that are willing to write. So we constantly need this. Right now, we do have a number of women on the outside that are waiting. The women volunteers are staying ahead of the women on the inside that are asking for this, largely because of two reasons. Number one, there are fewer women incarcerated, and number two, we're getting fewer requests. So the number of female volunteers is keeping up and staying ahead. We'd rather have women on the outside waiting to do this than women on the inside. But that doesn't mean we don't need new women to continue to sign up. If women stop signing up to volunteer from the outside, eventually that situation will reverse itself and we'll have women on the inside waiting. We need men and women to sign up to carry the message to alcoholics that are incarcerated through the Corrections Correspondence Service. I'm at the GSO booth all weekend. I'm here today. Anybody interested, give me your name and address and we'll get one to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I'm a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come from Queensland, Australia. And I'm glad I heard you people share on your correctional stuff. I've been sober for 12 years, 8 months and 1 day, and every day is a special gift. And 1 year in my sobriety, a gentleman asked me if I'd go into correctional centres with him. And we have quite a few correctional centres in Queensland, especially around Brisbane area. And I go to Palmer Creek. That's way over in Hilton Land, close to New South Wales. And it takes about 2.5 hours to drive there. So two of us go in there. And I do the Woodford Jails with another fellow. And, you know, we carry the message in to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the gentleman I'm talking about, commitment. And, you know, we have a lot of people that actually are willing to go into the jail, but there's no commitment there. You know, they come up to me and I say, oh, I'd love to go in there, and we go and see the coordinator, and we go to all the trouble of getting, what do you call it, that stuff that you fill in the papers and you get the people to sort of go in. And, you know, when it's time for them to go in at that particular time when it's set for, you know, they somehow or other have got an excuse to that out, you know. And, you know, I've had the privilege of being asked to actually sponsor an Indigenous person. And, you know, I used to drink with the black fellas in the park. This Alcoholics Anonymous has given me this brand new life. And, you know, it's just this brand new stuff that I've got today, you know, and it's really Alcoholics Anonymous. And by going to correctional centres, you know, every now and again, I go to a lot of meetings around Brisbane area, all over the place. And you know, a fellow, an inmate will come up to me and he'll say, g'day, go, hey, remember me? I come
from the correctional centre. Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Good morning. My name is DJ Vred. I'm an alcoholic.
How are you?
I just want to thank all of you guys for your service work. My sobriety day is July 3rd, 2005, which is, I celebrate 5 years tomorrow. And, it's all because in California, the H&I, I found the program by accident because when I was in prison, I didn't know what you guys were. I thought you guys were a religious group. You guys had a box of donuts and I followed you guys. So from, and I came in and I found the story. So when I did 16 and a half years in prison, and when I came home, I got with the program. My first meeting was a meeting in Marina Pacifica in Long Beach. And from there, I get the opportunity to carry the message to the same place I received it. I go into the jail systems, and that was an example of that the program works, bearing witness that it does work. And this is my goal, is to be on the Board of Corrections to carry the message, because I've been on both sides. So thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to just make a very brief point about both of those last speakers. Number one, when we talk about commitment, the key word in prison is consistency. Inmates, let me tell you, have been in there 21 years, have had more new programs start today and close tomorrow. They've had more volunteers come in, outside sponsors come in today, they're gone tomorrow. They're at this location today, they're shipped to another location tomorrow. There's one thing they don't have is consistency. And what I've seen, the strongest outside sponsors in the prison system are those that are there every week, and they know their host institution staff as well as their own family. And that makes their AA program in that prison viable, consistent, and it's long-lasting. And that gentleman that just spoke about both sides of the fence, one of the things that inmates have a tough time with is hearing the message from somebody who's walked the walk. One of the things we are really trying to do in Florida is we're trying to get those recovering convicted felons back in the system because their message carries the message.
Thank you. I'm Gary Higgins, alcoholic, from Redwood City, and that was a very good panel. One of the things I wanted to ask, I'll ask the panel this. I've had people ask me, they say, well, in H&I, you guys don't rotate. And these are mostly, I guess, GSR people that ask me that. And I simply tell them that, you know, our purpose is to make sure that the meetings get brought in, not that we rotate. Sometimes we can't rotate. If you go into San Quentin, we rotate. We don't have the same people that go in every week. We rotate, but in San Quentin, they run their own meetings. I consider myself a member of that group. I'm not the secretary. I don't have an elected position in that meeting. So I tell them that, and that's what anybody else could tell them, too, about rotation. And when you're in county jail, the inmates rotate. So you have different inmates every time. So it's a whole different meeting, and you're just seeing them for the first time. But I think the main thing, too, and what Dan was talking about on clearances, in San Mateo County, California, that's a three-month process. And I was a coordinator of work furlough for about 3 years. And I had two guys back-to-back that came in, and I got them cleared. It took me 3 months to get them cleared, and after 6 months, they said, okay, my time's up. I said, what? Your time ain't up. I said, it took us 3 months to get you cleared. So my only comment there is if you're not sure if you want to do H&I, is go do it where you don't have to get cleared for a while and see if you really like it before you go to a facility where it's going to take this much time to get cleared. Because then what happens is you stick the coordinator with having to make sure that those nights get covered, or the coordinator has to miss the football game to go in and do it. So that's it. Anybody else has any comments on rotation? That's my comment.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brent. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank so much the panel for getting up and sharing your experience with us. It means a lot to me. My sobriety date is April 7th, 1997. I've never been to prison. My sponsor has been sober 25 years. He's never been to prison. But my grand sponsor got sober in the Colorado State Penitentiary. Is it early 1970s, 1969, something like that? And so because of him, because somebody carried the message to the penitentiary and gave it to him, is the reason why I have effective sponsorship today, I guess you can say. But I would like to ask a quick question. Is it Diane? You said something about you elected a GSR representative inside the meetings. How do they serve? How do you get them to effectively serve within in there?
Thank you for asking. I forgot to share with you. Not only that, I got our delegate cleared so she could come in to the Down But Not Out group and share agenda topics with the group that were of interest to them, that they could fully participate in. So she could get from them an informed group conscience, which was led by the general service rep who fed his material to her through me.
Okay, thank
you. So yeah. It was amazing. It was another dignity, value, worth thing for these guys, that they were so much a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, they contributed to the general service conference of Alcoholics Anonymous through their own delegate.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is Murray, and I'm an alcoholic. My higher power has been leading me to carry the message inside the walls for the last 30 years, back home in Canada, 12 years in the great state of Florida, and now in South Carolina, where I am presently. I really, really appreciate, in fact, I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate the reinforcement that this panel has given me this morning to keep on doing what I'm doing with the strength that I pray for and get from my higher power. And knowing that I'm not alone, because you're here too, and this room is full, and my heart is full. Challenges, we all have challenges. We've all had challenges since we started drinking. We've had challenges. Life doesn't get perfect, it just gets better. I was really grateful to hear a couple of myths, AA myths, exploded this morning too. You don't have to have any particular length of time of sobriety to carry the message. Bill Wilson hadn't been sober very long when he carried the message to Dr. Bob. But if he'd had to wait, if somebody had told him to wait until he'd been sober for 5 years, where would we be? And Joanne made mention of her sponsor being a man. Good grief. That is some places that they would burn
my
crosses.
Personally,
my longest term sponsor was a lady back home in Toronto, St. Joan. She's gone now. God bless her. I don't know where I'd be without her either. There's nowhere in the book that it says you have to have a certain amount of sobriety, or that you have to do this or you have to do that. Thank God. Challenges. Presently, the challenges that I see, the things that we may be able to overcome, the length of time it takes to get cleared. And you would think that a state correctional organization would have like a central clearance. I understand that they've tried to do this in Florida and with some degree of success, possibly. But it's something that we all need to be aware of and try to push in our own homes, because it takes so long to get cleared for any one place. Another thing I would like to address, and I would really appreciate if anybody here, especially the gentleman from GSO perhaps, my favorite tool for years and years and years has been the grapevine. I love, I devour grapevines, and I've been buying them by the box load, the old out-of-print copies from Grapevine, and the price of them has been going up and up and up, and it's to a point now where it's getting very, very difficult to get backing, financial backing, to buy these boxes of grapevines. And, of course, the jails aren't going to pay for them, and even if they would, we couldn't accept it from them. But my guys, my jail, they love these grapevines. And because there's stories of other people within the last few years that are many times that it's easier for them to relate to. So it's a fantastic tool. And if we can get them more affordable, I know we'd all appreciate it. And
thanks very much. We're going to try to get one or two more. We're just about out of time. I'm sorry I'm not going to get to everybody. But
My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic, and I come from Christchurch, New Zealand. So all I wanted to say is what a great thrill it is to be in a room with so many people who have got the same passion and interest at over the 36 years that I've had in this fellowship. And the work that the group, the head office, and all you folks are doing, what's happening here is happening down in our place, which, you know, is one stop short of the Antarctic. So the same problems, the same issues with bureaucracy and the enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm amongst the fellowship. It's just beautiful to be part of it and to be in a room with so many other people. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I apologize to those that haven't gotten to the microphone, but unfortunately we're out of time. We do need to vacate the room for the next meeting. Diane just had one more comment to close, and then we're going to close with the responsibility statement.
Hi there again. Just had a flash. One of the things I do every time I go behind the walls and wire, when I sit down with my brothers in sobriety, I let them know that I'm not a cop, and I never want to be a cop. And what I say to them, coming from the high road, coming from the place of love, I say, let's not do or say anything tonight that would compromise one another. We are here, brothers and sisters in sobriety, to carry the message of hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let's really be careful. And, you know, this is one of the things in our conference agenda this year, some challenges with this, having to sign legally binding documents and what have you. And I have found that this works very, very effectively. I'm not a cop. I don't want to be a cop. I'm here as a sister in sobriety. And let's all remember that as we carry this message of hope one to another tonight. Just a little thought that we find works very well in Northern California. You want to carry it together? Okay. I guess we all are going to close together with the responsibility pledge. Thank you. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
You know, we got a bond. Yeah.